Case number 5 for argument this morning is Dietrich against Smith. Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Your Honor. Attorney Jeffrey Jensen appears on behalf of the appellant, Robert Dietrich. And Mr. Dietrich comes before the court today, faced with the formidable task of demonstrating that the ruling of the state court in this case is based upon an unreasonable application of a well-settled principle of federal constitutional law. Now, the federal principle of constitutional law that we're talking about here was first enunciated in Pennsylvania versus Ritchie, and it is that otherwise confidential information must be turned over to the court for an in-camera inspection if it is potentially exculpatory. And I would like to read a portion of the Ritchie case concerning...
And that's the problem here. The district court said that your client had not satisfied that standard.
Right. And that is what I think is an unreasonable application of the Ritchie law. Because Ritchie says...
That's not a question of unreasonableness. As I said, the district court found that you hadn't satisfied that standard. As the district court agreed with the state court that you hadn't satisfied that standard.
Well, the district court's decision was based on a little bit different reason than the state courts were. The district court said, first of all, that what you're seeking here, Mr. Dietrich, is not exculpatory because it is opinion evidence rather than factual evidence. And then the district court went on to say, even if it is the type of evidence covered by Ritchie, the state court didn't consider it. And the state court did consider it. And the reason I say that is because, not to impugn the state court trial judge's integrity or anything of that nature, because he did say in a post-conviction motion, I didn't consider this evidence. But in the recent years, the Wisconsin appellate courts have grown really frustrated with reviewing exercises of sentencing discretion, and so they have not allowed trial courts to just say, I've taken into account all of the things that I'm supposed to take into account and hereby sentence you to 40 years in prison. You're required to lay out the considerations that you consider as a trial court judge. And in this case,
I'm lost. I don't understand how this responds to my question.
Well, it's intended to be responsive because the question was whether the district court approved of the state court's application of the federal principle to the effect that there was no showing that this was exculpatory evidence.
But the court said it wasn't basing its sentencing decision on the therapist's comments.
Right. But when the judge was laying out his reasons for the sentence, he said, and I'm quoting from the transcript, I have your version that talks about, if you will, an affectionate, promiscuous, encouraging, curious, and interested 12-year-old who initiated sexual contact because of a crush, amorous feelings toward you, who then, after engaging in this behavior, undertook a course of self-destruction wherein she mutilated herself, tried to kill herself, and generally allowed her life to spin out of control.
So there was lots of evidence in the record that she was engaged in self-destructive behavior having nothing to do with Dieterman, right?
Well, I tried to fill the record with as much evidence of that as I could, but I feel like I ran into a major roadblock in not being able to get this evidence. I'll try to address Judge Easterbrook's...
But initially you wanted to use that evidence on the merits to say that your client wasn't even guilty.
Yes, it was couched in those terms.
And then,
yes.
Then you changed gears and said, well, you know, maybe it's useful for the sentence, but the judge says he's not relying on it. So how can it possibly be something that would support habeas corpus relief?
Here's the showing that Mr. Dietrich made at the trial court level following sentencing. He first made the allegation that I've just mentioned, that you did rely on this opinion evidence, Judge. And the reason I say you did rely on it is that quote I just listed. Second of all, there is good reason to believe that this evidence in the therapy records is potentially exculpatory, because in Wisconsin, probably most states, the therapists are mandatory reporters, and nowhere during this treatment course did the therapist report any sexual assault. And thirdly, and probably most importantly, the district attorney came into court on the day of sentencing and said, there is no confidentiality violation here. We've obtained the HIPAA release. And so whatever confidentiality concerns BT may have had were waived when she signed the release for the state. I think there is, at the bare minimum, a showing that the evidence in the records is potentially exculpatory.
I still don't get it. How does this show that the evidence is exculpatory?
Because the judge in sentencing Mr. Dietrich said, one of the reasons I'm imposing 13 years of initial confinement and 7 years of extended supervision is because of the damage you did, your behavior did, to the victim. And there is reason to believe that that isn't really the case. That's why it's exculpatory. Goes not only to innocence, but it also goes to the punishment. And the quote that I wanted to read from Ritchie is this. It's at page 57. At this stage, of course, it is impossible to say whether any information in the CYS records may be relevant to Ritchie's claim of innocence, because neither the prosecutor nor the defense counsel has seen the information. And what is unreasonable about the lower court's application of that standard is that they are in effect demanding that Mr. Dietrich tell the court what is in these confidential records before the court will order that the records be reviewed in camera. And that, I don't think, is what Ritchie had in mind, or the court had in mind, when it wrote the opinion in Ritchie.
Well, what the district court says is that this is just not exculpatory in the sense that Ritchie uses that term. Ritchie doesn't require the confidential information be provided merely for cross-examining an unfavorable witness, and because it wasn't exculpatory, you know, her opinion certainly is no evidence that anything did or didn't happen. Her opinion can only be, you know, her view of the aggregate of what she's heard about. I just am having trouble seeing Ritchie going that far.
Well, I think what you're referring to, Judge, is the discussion by the district court that there is somewhere in Ritchie a distinction between opinion evidence and fact evidence.
Well, actually, I was looking at the district court's opinion just then, and what the district court says is that the Ritchie decision doesn't require confidential information just for cross-examining, that in essence is really all that you were interested in, or all that he could be interested in, and so he wasn't prejudiced by the judge's decision not to undertake this in-camera review.
But the evidence
was nothing in the records that could have affected the outcome of the sentencing, Rizzo, you know, et cetera.
Well, if the judge, as he said in that remark that I read into the record, sentenced Mr. Dietrich because of the damage that his behavior did to the victim, and it turns out that that isn't actually what caused most of her bad behavior, then I think that is a relevant consideration in deciding whether the judge properly exercised his sentencing discretion. And at this point, I will reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Certainly, Mr. Jensen. Ms. Burgundy.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Sarah Burgundy for the State of Wisconsin and Judy Smith. Counsel described his task as formidable in this case. I would describe it as insurmountable. Whether we look at this case through the lens of Townsend and Tucker as an inaccurate sentencing information issue or under Ritchie as a under the Ritchie line of cases, Mr. Dietrich cannot identify any clearly established Supreme Court precedent entitling him to relief in federal habeas. The emphasis or the focus for this court is actually on not what the district court did, but on what the state courts decided. And if we look at those cases, under Townsend and Tucker, the Wisconsin Circuit Court did not unreasonably apply those cases when it made findings that the therapist's professional opinion is not information that can be shown to be inaccurate. And secondly, that the court did not base its sentencing decision on the therapist's remarks. It noted that the court made no specific mention of her opinion, and the court's emphasis on the overarching concern that Mr. Dietrich seemed to be shifting blame to the 12-year-old victim in this case. And if we look at the case under Ritchie, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals laid out the Ritchie analysis, and that likewise is not clearly established precedent in the sentencing context. It found that there was no showing that there was potentially exculpatory evidence when it said that it was pure speculation that the records would identify the cause of the victim's problems in this case. And it also found that there was no showing that the outcome of the sentence would be different, that it was all cumulative to police reports and a sentencing memorandum explaining different reasons for why BT was behaving the way she had.
So do you agree that, though, Ritchie does apply to the sentencing phase of a trial?
There's no – the Supreme Court hasn't applied it to that extent. I mean, it's not –
But in Williams against Taylor, the Supreme Court said, you know, you don't have to be ridiculously literal about its cases if it's an obvious application of the rule. I mean, the court didn't happen to be talking about sentencing in Ritchie, but why wouldn't you apply it to sentencing?
Well, I think in this case, because of what you're dealing with, it's a therapist's opinion.
That's different from whether Ritchie, as a general rule, applies, mm-hmm. whether there's some kind of evidence that needs to be, you know, factual evidence, perhaps, you know, many circumstances could be imagined. Certainly sentencing is a phase of the criminal trial.
Sure. And I think because Ritchie's based on Brady, which there's language in Brady suggesting that that reasoning could apply to sentencing, I think, yes, it could under certain circumstances. But the reason
You're not in any doubt that Brady applies at sentencing, are you?
Excuse me?
You have no doubt that Brady applies at sentencing, right?
It could. Or there's language in Brady suggesting that if it goes to a question of punishment.
If the state of Illinois doesn't understand that Brady and its derivatives apply at sentencing, we may have to be issuing lots of writs of habeas corpus. If you're proceeding on any contrary understanding, you're just waiting for a jail delivery. That doesn't seem to me prudent on Illinois' part.
Wisconsin.
And I can shift that. I would be glad to shift that to Illinois.
How about West Virginia?
And Ritchie is, in a sense, an application of Brady, and that's what takes us. That's brought me to my question.
Sure. And I think under this context, you still need a showing that the evidence is potentially exculpatory. I mean, if Ritchie can be applied to sentencing, if we are assuming that it is applied to sentencing, just applying it here, it just doesn't work. There's no potentially exculpatory information. There's no evidence that the outcome of the sentencing would be different given the breadth of evidence that the judge considered, and given really that you know, this is a therapist's opinion that can't really be proven or disproven. And Mr. Dietrich has not pointed out anything that could be in these records that would say, yeah, this is the definitive cause of this victim's problems or not. I'm at the risk now of otherwise summarizing my brief. I don't know if the court has any other questions, and if not, I'll take my seat and ask that you affirm. Thank you very much.
Counsel. Anything further, Mr. Jensen?
Yes. I think it's important for me to emphasize that it was the state, with the consent of BT and her mother, that her mental status was put into issue at the sentencing hearing. The way the case has evolved, we spent a lot of time talking about Richie today. But in the beginning, my opinion was that there was no confidentiality of these records at all because of the release that was signed for the district attorney. So they were able to see what was in the therapy records. I was not. At the very least, I think it may create a balancing.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.